Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI. Welcome back to our deep dive. Today we're really getting into something powerful, Mo Yan's Red Sorghum. This isn't just history, it's visceral.
Yeah.
It's about passion, violence, legend, all rooted in the earth.
It really is. And Mo Yan himself, you have to start there. His pen name, interestingly, means don't speak.
Oh.
Yeah. And he won the Nobel Prize in 2012, Red Sorghum, which actually started as 5 novellas back in 86, I think. That's what put him on the map, globally speaking.
And the style, you mentioned before we started, this term keeps coming up, hallucinatory realism.
Yeah.
What exactly are we looking at there before we even get to the plot?
Well, it's crucial. It signals that he's not interested in, you know, a clean official version of history. It's not realism. He's like Zola or someone.
Okay.
Think more along the lines of maybe Garcia Marquez. He blends the brutal, the grotesque, with things that feel almost mythical, larger than life. The goal seems to be making the history of his home region.
Which is where, but, again...
Northeast Gaomi Township in Shandong Province. He wants to make that history so sensory, so overwhelming, you just feel its truth. It bypasses intellectual argument, almost.
So it's history felt in the gut, not just read in a book, through the smell of sorghum wine, the feel of the soil.
Exactly that. And the time period is key, too. We're talking the 1920s, the warlord era, really chaotic, leading right into the brutal Second Sino-Japanese War in the late 30s, early 40s.
And the story itself follows a family line.
Yes. It's told by the grandson, looking back, trying to piece together this, well, this incredibly intense family saga. A story defined by defiance, by passion, and... yeah, by a lot of bloodshed.
Okay, let's dive into that origin story then, the foundation. It starts with a wedding, but not exactly a happy one.
No, not at all. We meet Dai Fenglian, who becomes grandma in the story. She's young, beautiful, but she's essentially being sold off.
Right, to the son of a distiller who's got leprosy.
Exactly. She's a pawn in the social transaction. But even from the start, you sense this fierce, defiant spark in her. She's not just passive.
And that defiance flares up almost immediately, doesn't it? During the procession itself.
It does. Bandits attack the wedding sedan. And this is where Yu Zhanao, the future grandpa, steps up. He's one of the sedan bearers, strong, capable, virile.
He fights them off.
Skillfully. And in that moment of shared danger, fighting side by side almost, this intense connection forms between him and Dai Fenglian. It cuts right across social barriers.
Wow. I mean, that violent clash right at the start.
Yeah.
It sets a tone, doesn't it? Like, even love or connection is born out of violence in this world.
That's a great way to put it. And that connection, that chaos, it culminates a few days later in the sorghum fields.
Ah, the famous scene.
Right. Yu Zhanao essentially ambushes her again.
Yeah.
But this time, well, it's an act of passion, a raw physical act that defies everything, her marriage, the social order.
And this is where the narrator's father comes from.
Exactly. Dogen, the father, is conceived right there in the sorghum. It's the family's foundational myth, you could say. Part violation, part liberation, entirely legendary.
What's so compelling there, too, is grandma's agency. She's not just acted upon. After her husband dies, and the text heavily implies grandpa had a hand in that.
Oh, definitely implied.
She doesn't just become a widow. She steps into power.
She absolutely does. Takes over the distillery, improves the sorghum wine until it's famous for its sheer potency. She becomes this incredibly strong matriarch, a real pillar for the community. She turns her situation on its head.
And Grandpa, Yu Zhanao.
Yeah.
He's also channeling that raw energy, right? But initially, maybe not so constructively.
Well, yeah, he starts out as a bandit leader. He lives outside the law, driven by impulse, by a kind of primal force. It's chaotic.
So this ties into that theme you mentioned earlier, violence as almost a creative force.
I think Mo Yan is definitely exploring that. Yu Zhanao's violence isn't presented as purely evil. It's elemental. It's there. The question is, what outlet does it find?
And the war provides one.
Exactly. When the Japanese invade, that raw, even selfish energy gets channeled into resisting the invaders. He becomes a guerrilla commander. Still brutal, still maybe self-serving in some ways, but now aligned with collective defense.
So the context shifts how we see his actions. The same brutality that made him an outlaw makes him a hero. in a sense.
In a very complicated sense, yes. He's never sanitized. He's still this wild figure, but the times find a use for his wildness. It shows how survival in those brutal times required qualities we might find uncomfortable.
Okay, so the personal dramas, the local power struggles, they collide head-on with this massive historical event, the Japanese invasion.
Yeah.
And that brings a new level of cruelty.
A truly horrific level. And this shift really pivots around one character, Uncle Arhat.
Who is he?
He's a worker at the distillery.
Mm-hmm.
Loyal, kind, compassionate. He represents the ordinary person, the innocent caught in the gears of war. The community's vulnerability, really.
And something terrible happens to him.
Yes. It's a pivotal, gut-wrenching scene. The Japanese capture him, and to make an example, to terrorize the community,
yeah.
They flay him alive, publicly.
Oh, cool.
It's described in unflinching detail. And that specific act of calculated cruelty, it just shatters everything. Any romantic idea of war is gone. It makes the fight personal, visceral for everyone.
It galvanizes them.
Absolutely. It turns Grandpa Yuzano's resistance from maybe opportunistic clashes into this focused, all-consuming war of vengeance. It's a point of no return.
And that horror, that specificity, feels like Mo Yan hammering home his point again, refusing to let history be cleaned up. This is what it was, written in blood and agony on the land itself.
Precisely. And this terrible reality, this legacy, is inherited by the next generation, by Father Dogwon.
The one conceived in the sorghum field.
The very one. He grows up witnessing his parents' incredible strength, their mythic status almost, but also their violence, the moral ambiguity. He carries that weight.
So he's less of a legend himself, more burdened by the legend.
I think so. He embodies that complicated inheritance. The book quotes something like his past being heroic, villainous, tragic, and comical all at once. That's his reality.
Which makes you wonder, right, if your family's story is this epic saga of passion and violence,
yeah.
How do you just live? His struggle feels more internal, maybe, where his parents was external.
That's a really insightful way to put it. His battlefield is perhaps more within himself.
So let's move towards the climax. It's tragic, as you might expect.
Deeply so. Grandpa Yuzanao, driven by that need for vengeance for Arhat, plans this huge ambush against a Japanese convoy.
And Grandma Dai Fenglian.
She takes on this vital role, the matriarch ensuring her fighters are supplied. She's bringing food to the men waiting for the ambush.
Hello.
Yeah. As she's crossing the sorghum fields, the very land that defines her life, her power, her family's origin, the fighting breaks out, and she's caught in the crossfire.
She dies there.
Yeah.
In the fields.
She dies there. Her blood literally mingles with the red earth, soaking into the sorghum stalks. It's devastating, but it also transforms her. She goes from being a leader to being a legend, consecrated by the land itself.
And Grandpa, what does this do to him?
He's consumed by grief, just shattered. He keeps fighting, but the sources suggest the clarity of the anti-Japanese resistance starts to fade. It dissolves into the much murkier, messier violence of the Chinese Civil War that followed. The purpose gets lost in fratricidal conflict.
So no clean ending, just more struggle.
More struggle, more ambiguity. And it's crucial to remember, as you pointed out earlier, the way this is told, it's not linear.
Right. The grandson piecing it together.
Exactly. It's fragmented, jumping around in time. It's like memory itself, messy, subjective, maybe even, well, hallucinatory. The structure reflects the content.
Okay, let's pull back and look at the big themes then. The red sorghum itself has to be key.
Absolutely central. It's the life force, isn't it? It represents vitality, passion, community through the wine, but it's also red. Stubbornly red, as the book says.
Red like wine, red like passion.
And red like blood. The sorghum is constantly stained crimson by the violence enacted on the land. It's life and death constantly cycling, rooted together. Renewal, but renewal born from violence.
And that hallucinatory realism style we talked about, it's not just stylistic flair, is it?
Yeah.
It feels like it's doing something important.
It's doing political work, I'd argue. Mo Yan forces you to experience this history through intense sensory detail. The smell of the fermenting wine, sticky and sweet. The metallic tang of blood. The feel of damp earth.
He makes it impossible to ignore, to sanitize.
Exactly. It bypasses intellectual defenses. You might question the facts, the interpretation, but the feeling of it, the visceral reality he creates that's undeniable, it gives a profound dignity to these chaotic, often brutal lives.
It's like he's saying the chaos, the brutality, that is the truth. And the miracle is the human spirit enduring within that.
Beautifully put. That's the heart of it, I think. The legend isn't about clean victories. It's about the sheer tenacity of life in the face of horror.
So to wrap up the legacy here, Red Sorghum feels like a hymn to untamed spirits. Characters who refuse definition, who carve out their own meaning against impossible odds.
Yeah, and it challenges us, doesn't it? It throws out those neat historical narratives we often prefer and gives us something much messier, bloodier, but maybe more truthful about resilience.
It feels like the novel suggests that true victory isn't just winning battles. It's about planting and harvesting stories, keeping that spirit alive across generations, no matter how harsh the soil.
And that act of transformation, turning suffering into story, turning brutality into a kind of enduring legend. That's why it hits so hard, I think, why it still speaks to us.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.